Good evening, everyone. It's Adam from Ukafuck 24 with you again tonight. And I'm at my 24th, finally made the 24th for Scotland after spending God knows how many months doing 24 regions of Ukraine. And I've made my 24th one in my Scotland series. It's got a great, exciting episode for you tonight. But before we get started, a big shout out to Stealth. At Shoot the Defence. Stel, without all your hard work behind the scenes, we wouldn't be able to put out this series. So I really appreciate everything for you over there. Tonight, I've come up to Perth. I'm not in the Australian one. I'm in the slightly colder one up in Scotland. And I'm talking to Matt Gallagher. Matt, good evening. How are you?
Good, thank you. Unfortunately, we are the colder Perth here, but... Lovely to be on, and as I say, it's great that you've invited me on, so thank you very much for that.
I really appreciate it, really appreciate it. Now, Matt, do you consider yourself, first of all, a St. Johnstone fan or a St. Johnstone reporter?
I think now I have to consider myself as purely a St. Johnstone reporter. In saying that, I do like to see the club do well always. I wouldn't say it makes my weekend if they win, but it probably makes my job a little bit easier these days if they do win. Everyone's in a bit better spirits to speak to. But no, going back to my younger days, I was brought up in Perth, born in Perth. So I grew up following the club, supporting the club. My earliest memories are turning up to the community football sessions that the club ran outside their stadium, McDermott Park. And kind of always dreaming of one day playing for the team themselves as a wee boy. So that was a special introduction to the club. And then, say, as time moved on, I got a wee bit older. My dad was a season ticket holder, and he would take me into the ground. And that's really where my love for the club started. I look at it differently now, but the club always has a bit of a special place in my heart. It'd be pretty fair to say that, I think.
Oh, definitely, definitely. You say you had me smiling there because sort of took me back to my own childhood there, thinking back to my early memories of following football in England as well. Now, of course, you would say you work for the Perthshire Advertiser. How long have you been working for them, and what's your involvement with the club these days through your work?
Yeah, so before I got the job, I've always kind of been interested in. As I say, I was interested in the club as a fan and just following the fortunes of the club. So I actually got involved in kind of covering under 20 games and things like that, sometimes for the club website or sometimes just purely for just out of the enjoyment of it all. At that point, I was kind of wanting to go and study at university. So I guess it was a good introduction to that as well. And then I went to university, went to work experience at the local paper, the Perthshire Advertiser. And there was a chap who was a sports editor at the time. Not sure if you'll listen to this or not. I hope you will, but it's a guy called Gordon Bannerman. And he'd been there for 25 years, around about 25 years. And it just so happened when I was at work experience, he was about to leave. So it was quite an easy transition, in a way, a very lucky transition. He was almost going out the door when I was needing a job. So, I can't thank him enough for all the support he's given me. And he still goes to the games as a freelance and covers games. So, that was about 5 years ago. My first introduction to the Perthshire Advertiser was he would take me along to games with him on a Saturday just to kind of get the feel of the club, get to know the people around the club. And just so that when the time did come, when he actually left, I would feel comfortable going to the games and just knew what it was all about. So it was a great buzz for me when that first game when I was on my own, you know, and covering the team I'd supported for the first time. Lovely buzz. And I feel very grateful to I've done that for the last 5 years now. And so there's a bit in the club's history from Graham Fulton, the former sports reporter. It's a really, really lovely message that I kind of hold close to me when I'm covering football now. And it's his quote in the book is that there is no doubt in my mind that the local newspaper can never be truly impartial in reporting the activities of the city's football team. Football reporters really are fans of typewriters, or in today's terms, supporters with a laptop and smartphone. And it's something that I actually have it saved as a photo on my phone because it kind of hits home to me when I don't think about it every week, but occasionally I look at that and think, you know, that's. He's spot on with that, and yeah, I feel very lucky to be able to, especially in these times when fans can't get into the stadiums. I feel guilty in a way, if I'm being honest with you, that I can still get in to watch the football team, and mm-hmm. at the end of the day, it is my job, and I'm obviously allowed to be there. But yeah, very, very lucky and privileged to be following the team and have the job that I have, I guess.
I can only imagine. I really can. I have to ask you, before we get into the club a bit more, you know, how has your sort of match day role, how has your routine changed pre-COVID to reporting on the club during the COVID times?
Hasn't changed all that much, to be honest. I mean, the club have always been fantastic with, so I can't speak for any other newspapers, but for the Persian Advertiser, they've always been absolutely fantastic in terms of access to players, access to the manager. Everything's obviously done online now. It's, I think not too many people knew about Zoom before the last year, but now it's you know, at the top of everyone's vocab. So yeah, the majority of interviews are now done via Zoom or via call. But yeah, you can, over the years, you get a great relationship with the players and the managers, and there's that kind of a comfortable nature to it all, where they kind of almost trust you to be on the other end of the phone all the time. So yeah, the club have been brilliant. In terms of on a match day, yeah, it's all very similar to what it was before. You've also got your COVID checks before you go in, and you need to fill out all these various forms and temperature checks before you go into stadiums, and all socially distanced when you're inside. And but apart from that, the actual reporting of the football has not differed too much for myself. I mean, I cover St Johnstone, but I also cover a lot of other local football teams who play kind of down the divisions, East of Scotland League teams like Jeanfield Swifts, Canoe, Lunkerty. But that, with the reporting of that, has obviously changed quite considerably, because they're all completely off just now. Can't even meet up to train, so all their stuff's just online training and things like that. So I've been able to report on that. It's been quite interesting just to kind of dive a bit deeper into that, and how all their players are handling not being able to play, and what that's like for the management teams and finances of those clubs. And so yeah, it's been nice. I always find it's nice not to just, I love focusing on St Johnstone, of course, it's probably our main focus for the paper, but there's a lot of other little football clubs around the area that have great stories. And especially during these times of coronavirus, it's interesting to find out how they're coping with it all.
Really is. I would say it's been sort of very insightful for me on my journey as well. Now, as I mean, you'll have to excuse me here. Some of our listeners, obviously, not from the UK, from elsewhere. I have to ask the question: where exactly is Perth? And yeah, you know, what clubs do you have? Sort of, you know, in the vicinity. Who do you consider your main rivals?
Yeah, so Perth as a city is it's quite central Scotland. I mean, we sit on the banks of the River Tay, which is Scotland's longest river, sorry. And down the River Tay, we've got Dundee, is about 20 minutes away. So there's the two Dundee clubs, Dundee and Dundee United. And through the years, I'd probably say that's down as our biggest, or St Johnstone's biggest rivalry. I mean, it's the game you'll certainly get the most St Johnstone fans heading down the road, making a day of it almost, and going for a few pints or whatever else in Dundee, and then heading along to games. So yeah, I'd say Dundee's the main one. You'll get maybe 1,000 up to 1,500 St Johnstone fans heading through to those games. So and there's always a good atmosphere. There's that extra little bit of buzz. I mean, I think a majority of people will get the train through. It's only a 15-minute train journey through, and you know, there's the camaraderie on the train and whatever else, and then, as I say, around the local watering holes in Dundee, and then up to the stadium for hopefully a positive result. So yeah, Dundee's probably, or Dundee United are probably the main two that the supporters look towards anyway.
That's great. Now, we were talking a little bit before recording. I try not to show my age, but in this case, it's kind of helpful. But obviously, one of my early football memories was with St Johnstone getting promoted to the Premiership back in the late 80s. You know, can you just, for us all, just you know, just a brief overview of the history. And am I right in thinking that the more recent times have been sort of St Johnstone's high point in its history?
Yeah, I mean, they've had a few high points through the years, obviously. I mean, 1884 is the kind of year that's put out when the Reform Act came out recently, that there was a bit of debate whether it was 1884 or if it was actually 1885. I think the first game actually took place in 1885. But yeah, of course, through the years, there's been highs and lows. But certainly the past 10 years or so has been incredible for the club. I mean, for a while, it was consistent top six finishes in the Scottish Premiership. And there was, you know, back-to-back appearances in Europa League, which is just absolutely phenomenal thought for, it still is for supporters. And just for everybody involved in the club. I mean, they've been in Europe a few times through the years. I think 1971, they put out Hamburg famously. I think that's one of the biggest results in the club's history, obviously, still to this day. And those guys are thought of as legends. And you need to fast forward through, I think it was 1999, they got back into European football, and it was the glamour tie. They played over in Finland against Vasa and got through that one. And the ticket waiting for the next round was a trip to Monaco. And this was a Monaco team that had Barthez and Trezeguet and people like that in their team. So for a club like St John's at the time to book a ticket like that was just absolutely remarkable. So didn't win, they drew 3-3 in Perth, but they didn't manage to get through. But so that gave the supporters a real taste of what it meant to follow the team in Europe and how special a place it was to be. So to have that kind of 3, 4, 5 years in a row in the recent history was just phenomenal, and some real great memories and real great some of the places you visit are just incredible as well. You'd never even dream of, never mind a football team. So to get back to that in the next few years, it's going to be tough, but I think St Johnstone fans would really appreciate another trip into Europe, that's for sure.
Oh, I can only it's great, absolute great fun, isn't it, being able to follow your team overseas in particular. I don't wish to give the game away. Do you remember the game in 99 by any chance?
I was old enough, but I'm sure I was at the home game. It was probably actually one of my earliest memories being at the home game. Say my dad used to take me along, and I was still a relatively young guy. I would have been under 10 anyway, so I think back then my main duty at the football was not actually to watch the game, but it was to I was on the halftime pie duty for the row of friends that my dad had. You know, it was all the kind of older guys that were too lazy to go and get their halftime snack. So I actually remember, it's probably my earliest memory of being at the football was collecting all these coins from all the different guys in the row, and a minute before halftime, kind of shuffling along to the kiosk and a big list of orders on this bit of pen and paper, and you know, handed it over, and there's your 10 pies and 10 bog rolls, or whatever it was. And I remember the excitement of going back and, you know, handing back the change, and they said, "Oh no, that's for you, son." And then that was me home happy, regardless of the result. That was my memory of. I think that was probably all I remember from that Monaco game, sadly. But yeah, I remember it was 3-3, and yeah, great memories, and a pretty full stadium that night, if I recall correctly.
Now, host, obviously, I do a little bit of research before I go into these recordings. Now, going back, you know, sort of 10 years earlier, I was surprised. I read, I think it was the season that they got promoted in 89, you moved to the new stadium. Pronounce it? Because it is it's an interesting spelling of it.
Yeah, no, McDermott Park, yeah.
Yeah, they moved there. Obviously, predates your time, Matt, but you know, did your father or, you know, did you hear any of the stories? So what was the old stadium like before the move? And how did the move change the club?
Yeah, so it was, previous stadium was called Muirton Park, and yeah, I've heard many stories of that. I obviously never attended it myself, but Just to touch on some of the games, hosted some of the greatest games in the club's history, like the European games against Hamburg. And I think back in those days, it was, you know, you're on the terracing where at half time you could kind of move around to whatever goal your team was shooting towards. Yeah. So I've heard many stories of that and how special that was, just to, and some of the, you know, not the battles that took place on the terracing, but you always got that wee bit of animosity, I think, when you were changing around at half time to the other side. And but it was a stadium that held very special memories for a lot of people. And it was the old kind of getting lifted over the turnstile in for free and things like that, I think. So a lot of that kind of stuff was going on. But actually, the area of Perth, in Muirton, there's, I think recently, quite recently in the last couple of years, they actually named some of the streets after kind of legends of the club, which was quite a nice wee touch.
Okay.
So yeah, that was a real nice one. But yeah, the time came to move up to McDermott Park and to the all kind of Cedar Stadium. And they would get great crowds back then. I read through the history book at St Johnstone quite often. I mean, there were often games where you were getting up to kind of, I think the capacity is around 11,000, but you're often getting, you know, approaching 10,000 fans. And one of the sad things is that obviously before coronavirus came in, it was, you know, you were struggling almost to get 2,000, 3,000 home fans up at McDermott Park. And, you know, it's a great stadium when it's, even when it's half full, it's a great, great stadium to be at for an atmosphere. And especially with European nights in recent years, when you've got 7,000 or 8,000 people there, you know, it really does feel like it's a full house. And it would be lovely once we get back to some normality if, you know, we could get a few more bumps and seats and that atmosphere back going again. That would be lovely.
I'd like to come back to that a little later. I'm putting it on the back burner at the moment. Now, I also read, am I right, some of the stadiums, some of the stands at the new stadium are also named after the heroes of the past, shall we say?
Yeah, so there's the Ormond stand. That's named after Willie Ormond. He's a legendary manager. I keep going back to this European run in the 1970s, but he was part of all that. And the club, actually, when they got to the League Cup final in 1969, Willie Ormond was the manager back then as well. It was a great kind of era for the club, those few years that Willie Ormond was there. Put together a great squad, and I've actually had the privilege of speaking to quite a few of them this week build up to the St Johnstone, obviously, in the League Cup final coming up at the end of this month. And it's only the third League Cup final I've ever been in, so I've been able to track back to a few of the guys that played 1969 in that Willie Ormond team. And that's another thing I actually feel really privileged just to be able to do, is speak to these guys who played such a big part in the club's history. And The greatest thing about it all is, I mean, these guys are really regarded as legends from a St Johnstone perspective, and they couldn't be more happier to speak to you. I mean, I was on the phone to one actually yesterday, and a guy called Gordon Whitelaw, and you know, his name to a lot of people might not mean anything, but for St Johnstone and St Johnstone's history, I mean, this is a guy who scored against Hamburg in the UEFA Cup. And he's also the only St Johnstone player to ever score against Real Madrid. He scored against Real Madrid at the Bernabeu friendly in 1971. Saints went on to lose 3-1. But sometimes you need to step back and think, oh, these guys are actually, this is quite incredible what these guys have achieved. So, to get back to your initial point, that Willie Ormond, he was in charge of that team. And I think it was obviously quite fitting that the club went and named a stand after him. He's a guy that's still very fondly remembered at the club.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine. What's the rest of the ground like? Correct me if I'm wrong, it's out in, on the edge of the city, is it?
Yeah, so it's out towards, it's maybe, you can walk from the city centre if you were to come into Perth and fancy to wander up. You'd maybe be, I don't know, maybe a 20-minute, half-an-hour walk up to the edge of the city. But I think maybe one of the reasons it was built on the kind of outskirts was for its links to the motorways and things like that, for easy access for fans coming in. It's just as you're kind of coming out of Perth. So, as I say, very easily accessible for coming in from buses and cars. But if you are wanting to have a few drinks or down in the pubs in Perth, there's bus routes up to the stadium, and it's a kind of 5-minute, 10-minute taxi ride away if you're into that as well.
That's great. Obviously, you mentioned there, Matt, of the, you know, back at the old ground. Was the old ground more central?
It was a bit more central, yeah. It was a bit toward, I think it's where there's now a big supermarket. I think it's Asda's there now. So not back in the city centre, but maybe about a 5-minute walk from the city centre as opposed to a 20 or 30-minute walk.
Quite common, I think, as across the world, that a lot of, you know, the new grounds have been put out on the edge of the city. But what I wanted to get to, though, was how does the city relate to the club then? You know, you mentioned about the fact there's the, you know, sort of 2,000, 3,000 fans coming over. Is there a, you know, a positive feel within Perth towards the club? And I have to ask, because I ask every club in Scotland, you know, sort of what is the, I guess it's the overarching feel of the old firm on the people of Perth as well. Do you find you're competing a lot with Glasgow Rangers and Celtic for support?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons why St Johnstone maybe don't get the numbers down at McDermott Park that they'd hoped for. I think a lot of it comes down to just pure the cost of football now. And I think you're looking at about you're over £20 anyway for a ticket to come into the game, and then on top of that you've got all your food and your travel to the game. So you stick it all together, it's quite a costly. It can be quite a costly day out. So, but no, the people of Perth have always kind of backed the club. I mean, if you look back to the 2014 Scottish Cup final when the club kind of won, it's the first piece of major silverware the club ever won. You know, I wouldn't say the city of Perth is a sleeping giant in terms of football, but the potential is certainly there when you saw how many people came out for the cup final. I mean, there was 15,000 people from, you know, St Johnstone supporting people from Perth and around the world kind of came to watch that game. 15,000 was incredible on the one day. And then the celebrations in the city itself the day after were just absolutely phenomenal. I mean, that night actually when we got back to... The game was at Celtic Park in Glasgow against Dundee United. When we got back to the city at night, I mean, I've never seen the pub so busy for a start. There was queues around corners to get in pubs, and some pubs were just shutting up shop completely. You know, the numbers were inside, and that was it for the night. So, in that sense, there is that population there that can back the football team, but. As I say, I think can't put my finger exactly what it is, but there are a number of reasons why people people rather spend a day in the pub and watch the results coming on the TV now, or there's just a lot of different factors involved, I think. And it's not for the want of trying, though. I mean, the club, they've got a fantastic family deal where you can get, I'm not sure what it is, but you can get a couple of kids in and an adult for really cheap. So yeah, they try all they can. And hopefully, when we do get back to some normality, they can get a few more down. But just to touch on your Rangers and Celtic point, I think it's the case for the majority of clubs out with the old firm in Scotland that certainly in Perth, yeah, there are buses that leave from Perth on a Saturday or Sunday, and you know, kind of bus fulls of supporters that head through to Glasgow and to support Rangers or Celtic. So yeah, I don't think it's just St Johnstone that have to deal with that. I think it's most cities around the country and Scottish teams around the country are having to deal with that. So, it's not up to St Johnstone who they can't kind of tell people who to support, I guess. So,
definitely, yeah. It's
there is definitely a nice base in Perth and there's a lot of villages around Perth, and I think historically there was a lot of buses that came from the villages and towns around Perth, St Johnstone supporting buses that came to the games. I think that's maybe something that's faded away in more recent years. Again, not entirely sure why, but it'd be nice to see that. I know there was a town called Creef. I know they recently kind of started up a supporters pub again and started running a bus to games. So it'd be nice to see that, the kind of resurgence of that again, all the wee villages and towns that are dotted around the main city with all these supporters. It'd be nice to see that all starting up again, yeah, helping to boost the crowds in Perth. That would be nice.
Definitely, yeah, it'd be wonderful to see. You mentioned earlier, obviously, about the football training outside the ground. As as a youngster. Now, I mean, first of all, does that still happen? Obviously, with COVID restrictions in place, certain things can't take place. But, you know, what does the club do to sort of help out in the community and to engage with the community on that sort of level?
Yeah, so it's quite incredible, actually. The guy that kind of ran the community sessions back when I was a wee kid is a guy called Athol Henderson. He's a bit of an unsung hero at the club. One of these guys that he's been around for forever and ever, and he's maybe someone that's not got the recognition that he's deserved through the years. He's actually now I think he's the chief executive of the St. Johnstone Community Trust, which is like the charitable kind of arm of St. Johnstone, so to speak. But yeah, he was the face when I first went to kids coaching down there, and he's still involved with it to this day. So the football sessions still take place on obviously before coronavirus again, but yeah, they still take place on a Saturday morning, and there's sessions through the week as well in the evenings for school kids. So yeah, still very much a part of the fabric of the club, but these kind of kids Saturday morning sessions are the first ones that get people involved in football in Perth. And I think they still have there was a tradition always when we attended them where there was a player of the day, or I can't remember exactly how they phrased it, but you'd get a green card. The player of the day from that session would go home with a green card, and I just remember the buzz. I can't say I got it too often, to be honest, but the buzz when you went home with this little green card to say that you'd had a good game that day was phenomenal. And I still think they do something similar. It's maybe a blue card now, to be fair, but so they're still there to this day, and it's a lot of the same guys that have been there through the whole kind of journey, which is lovely to see as well.
That's absolutely great. I know it just got me thinking there. From with my non-football hat on, being a teacher as with my background, one of the things I really love to see is that the roles within football that don't revolve around being the superstar on the pitch. And I think it's really good, in particularly with the Scottish teams, how the community side of it provides so many opportunities for people to be involved in football, even if they haven't got, the talent, shall we say, to be real stars in the future. Is that something you would agree with?
Oh, definitely. I mean, the St. Johnstone Community Trust have actually, I think they just, in the last couple of months, they've been awarded a Scottish Football Association Award for their kind of work in the community. I think it was kind of the top club in Scotland for that side of things. So, they do so much work. And again, I think it's something that goes under the radar a little bit. So it's lovely when they do get recognised with these awards. I mean, they do a whole range of things. It's not just football. I mean, during the coronavirus, they've had to adapt. And they've adapted incredibly well. I mean, they've been going out delivering prescriptions, delivering meals to people in the community. And they've just actually, I did a story last week, they've just started doing befriending calls. So they're getting people from the community trust or club historians or former players to phone out to be honest, it doesn't have to be anyone that's struggling. It can be anyone that just fancies a little chat to perk them up, or anyone that's been in isolation and just, needs that little bit of someone on the other end of the phone. So, these things, as I say, do go under the radar a lot of the time. And I think it's absolutely phenomenal, the work that they do. And it's something that should be shouted from the rooftops. I think it's, the fact, as I say, they've had to adapt. So they've adapted so well to the recent circumstances we've found ourselves in. But even before that, I mean, the work they do, I mean, they've got things like, they've got a mental health and wellbeing football team. There's the walking football. They've got a football memories group for people with dementia, all these kind of things that so many different people that they help out, and at the end of the day make their lives better. So I think the St. Johnstone Community Trust is a wonderful organization, and I never get tired of kind of speaking highly of them, because as I say, sometimes these places don't get the credit they deserve. So we're very, very, very lucky at St. Johnstone to have such an organization.
We'll make sure they get the shout out they deserve. I actually think I've spoken to Athol myself once I'll make sure he gets a copy of this as well to promote it, so you can hear all the good things being said. Now, getting back to the football side of it, what's the atmosphere like? You know, pre-COVID in particular, what was the atmosphere like on the match day? The boys there make a good racket.
Yeah, well, there was it kind of goes in wee fits and spurts, I find. I mean, for a while they had, I don't know if you want to go down as the ultra kind of the group or whatever you want to call them, but there was certainly for a while there was a group of young fans who were real energetic, and you know, they brought the colour and they brought drums and whatever else to games, mainly to home games. I was actually, I'll admit, when I was a supporter growing up, I really enjoyed going to games and having that little bit of atmosphere and that little bit of buzz about the game. Especially at a club like St Johnstone, where you don't get the biggest crowds in recent times, it's nice to have that little bit of atmosphere to feed off, especially if the game's not entertaining you as much as you would like. So, we had there was a little group of fans in recent years that, you know, they did make a racket, and it really did help boost the atmosphere at McDermott Park, but for whatever reason, it just kind of drifted off in the last year anyway, before football was stopped with coronavirus and fans not let back in. So, again, it'd be nice to see them back in, because one of the lovely things, the press box is actually over in the main stand up the back, and this group of supporters would sit in the far and east stand over the opposite side, and you'd often catch yourself glancing over to these kind of the choreographed chants, you know, with the hands up and the jumping about together. And one of the nice things was you'd see younger fans, like I could remember, like when I was a kid, like when I was, I don't know, 6, 7 year old, and you could see youngsters like that gathering down the bottom of them and trying to copy them. And it was almost like it was helping to generate that next kind of fan base. So if we can get them back in at some point, that would be lovely, because I think the players appreciate it as well. The amount of times that they've said that, not just these guys, but they do really appreciate when there is a vocal backing inside the stadium, and the kind of flags and the colour. I think it does make a difference to the players as well.
Well, you've sold me anyway. I do love a bit of atmosphere at a game. Like you said there, it can help you when the game's slightly less interesting, and it does happen when you watch as much football as people like ourselves do. You mentioned earlier about there's a few pubs in Perth to grab a couple of pints, and there were some busy pubs post cup final victory. What are the best ones to go to grab a beer before the game, shall we say? Are there anywhere fans tend to congregate and a good place to go to get a bit of pre-match buzz, would you recommend?
Yeah, so there's actually a bar at the ground. It's called the Muirton Suite. So back to Muirton Park, it's called the Muirton Suite. So it's actually just located underneath the main stand at the ground. So I better give that one a plug, or the club might not be too happy with that one. But once you've ventured up from the city centre, you can park yourself in there for half an hour or so before the game, and they do various pints and get some food in there as well, some stovies or some pies or whatever else, and you'll always get a kind of familiar face in there.
Got to ask you there as well. Obviously, you mentioned the pies from the game back in 1999. How do the pies today compare to the pies that your dad and his friends used to eat when?
It's a completely different world these days. I think it's I just remember the pure Scotch mint pie back then when I was buying them. But now you've got all sorts of variations. I mean, all these weird and wonderful steak and chorizo and whatever else. So,
oh jeez.
I know. I think the offering's a lot better these days. And actually, there's a St Johnstone podcast that's just started up, and I noticed they put up a poll the other day of your favourite kind of pie at McDermott Park, and there was, as I say, all these weird and wonderful ones in it these days. So. I think we're quite lucky in Perth with the selection of pies that are on offer on match day.
I'm going to go off on a slight tangent. I have found a Twitter feed somewhere about the best pies in Scotland, and they have the whole sort of their whole Twitter handle is devoted to talking about pies at games in Scotland, which I would love to spend hours discussing as well. it is a whole different topic, I know. Right then. Obviously, there you mentioned about the suite at the club and the like. For me personally, I've always seen St Johnston as one of these sort of clubs of stability. It's never one that's in the news of having any sort of real financial headaches, shall we say. What are the owners like up there? Not nice guys?
Yeah, been fantastic. I mean, very family orientated club. That's been the way for quite a while now. It's the Brown family, and the nice thing about that is they're local from Perthshire. I think it's St Maidos that they're from. I mean, they have a real kind of passion for the club. They actually care about the club, and I think that really means a lot to supporters. But yeah, as you say, there's a club through the years that's never really been in financial trouble, certainly in recent times, far from it. I mean, it was Jeff Brown was the chairman before, and he's passed the baton on to his son, Steve. That was in 2011. So, and yeah, he runs a really, really tight ship at McDowell Park. He's been a fantastic, fantastic, fantastic chairman. And I think the fans maybe get a wee bit frustrated at times when, you know, the club isn't putting the money in the pocket and going out and getting star signings left, right and centre. But, you know, this is a formula that's worked so well for St Johnston over the years. And, you know, they've had great success at the same time.
You've got a League Cup final at the end of the month.
And yeah, and I tell you, we touched on it earlier, but when you look at the success they've had in the last 10 years, nobody can have any complaints, I don't think, about you know, the chairman not occasionally putting his hand in the pocket to get an extra player or whatever else. So he's done a remarkable job. And yeah, as you touched on, a League Cup final to come up as well. And that's these kind of, although the fans can't get in, these occasions are still massively, massively special and important for a club like St Johnston. So yeah, as I say, they're a real family orientated club, people who care about the club. And I think that really does mean a lot.
I have to ask, it just pop in my head. I have to apologise if I put you on the edge. How's the streaming going of the games? Has it been successful there, or how's that been with the fans locked out?
Yeah, so I think it was a big kind of mission of the club, obviously, as with a lot of other clubs, when it became apparent that the fans weren't going to be getting in and weren't going to be getting in for the kind of foreseeable future. It was a real mission of the club to kind of up their online presence. And Saints TV, they'd introduced a Saints TV for the first time, and you know, where it's your kind of one-stop shop for your games on a match day, your interviews pre and post match, and just kind of the occasional little feature with past players or whoever else. So yeah, the club have really, really, really stepped up in that sense. And a lot of, they deserve a lot of praise for the offering that they do give. It just gives that kind of personal feel still for the supporters that they are still involved, not just on a match day, but through the week as well. They can get their St Johnston offering. And yeah, I think that's been appreciated. They get really good. One of the actual commentator for on a match day now is a chap called Stephen Watt, who I know quite well, and he's kind of grown up a real big St Johnston fan, and it's quite. I don't actually have to listen to the games because I'm at them myself, but I've occasionally listened back to the highlights where he's been commentating, and you can just see his passion coming through on the microphone, and it's wee things like that that are nice as well. I think that kind of personal touch to it all, and the club have gone out their way to get really good kind of co-commentator hosts in, you know, previous players and legends of the club that have come in and taking up co-commentary duties, so that's added a nice wee angle for supporters listening in as well. So yeah, the club have done a lot, and especially in the build-up to this final that's coming up, and then the same could be said for the build-up to the semi-final as well. I mean, there's been endless amounts of coverage coming out from the club as well, just to kind of, although it's tough that the fans can't be there, they're still trying their very best to make sure that there is a real cup final buzz about this all. And yeah, so that's gone down really well. So yeah, the club have adapted well, and for how much longer they're going to have to, you know, be doing this with a live stream to the games, who knows? But they're certainly doing their best to give supporters a real kind of positive offering on a Saturday afternoon.
I mean, I have to say, just from a personal point of view, living overseas, streaming services have been a real lifeline. And with the English leagues going to streaming services 2-3 years pre-COVID, it became a real popular thing for us to be able to tune into a game. It's really helps the international community, people like myself, no end. So all credit to what's gone on in Scotland in particular during this period. It's really, really credible, and well done to you all. Well, Matt, one final question from me tonight, and it's one I do ask all my guests. Going to put you on in the hot seat now. You can put your journalistic hat, you can put your fan hat on, whichever one you want here for this. Because depending on how you look at it, you may answer the questions differently. If there were some places in particular that you really look forward to visiting with St John's, and it could be to report on the game or purely to go as a fan's experience, could you give two or three to our listeners that you would recommend to go visit when coming to Scotland in the future?
Sure. I've got quite a few friends who are supporters, so I'll maybe put my hat on in terms of for them and say the games that they enjoy going to. So, yeah, first and foremost, I think some of the most enjoyable away days, so to speak, for supporters of St Johnstone are through to the capital, going to Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. Again, I think purely a day out in the capital tells its own story. You know, it's the kind of the buzz of that. And then, so you get the train through, and then whether it's a few beers in the train again, like it was with Dundee, and then into the capital, and there's endless amounts of pubs and whatever else there to keep you entertained up until kickoff. So, yeah, so that's through to, so you'd be playing Hearts at Tynecastle. It's just and I think a lot of players and managers say the same. Tynecastle, the Stadium of Hearts, is just a fabulous venue to watch football, and one of these stadiums where you're right close to the action, right close to the pitch. Mm-hmm. And I think in terms of St Johnstone, they've had a couple of decent results there over the years, and that always helps. And the same goes for the same goes for Hibs, Hibernian. Up at Easter Road, I mean, it's the kind of same pre-match rituals for supporters in terms of getting into Edinburgh and whatnot, but another different viewing experience. And I think Easter Road in particular has been a happy kind of hunting ground for St Johnstone in recent times. And if I just kind of look back over the last few years, there's been three or four kind of last-minute winners at Easter Road or last-minute equalisers. So I think for a supporter, there's nothing better than that kind of buzz of your team kind of grasping onto something in the very last kick or head of the ball. So I'd say the two Edinburgh clubs are right up there, Hearts and Hibs. And just for something a bit different, if you're for that day out, if you're out for the full day, up to Ross County, up to Dingwall.
Oh, good old Ross.
Yeah, so you're up to the Highlands there. So that's, again, you maybe don't take masses of numbers, but again, a lot of people see that as a right good day out where you make the most of the whole day. And Dick, maybe a stop off in Inverness on the way up to Dingwall, and then Dingwall's not the biggest place, but there's a couple of nice wee pubs there, and there's a pub right at the train station, actually, when you come in, that's kind of renowned around Scottish football, I think. Just for it's kind of the last stopping ground before you got to the stadium, so
Give it a shout out. Come on, what's it called?
I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. I'm pretty sure it's the Mallard. I might have to confirm that one for you, but
no worries.
There's a lot of St Johnstone fans that have certainly enjoyed their day up out there. So,
ask you quickly, Matt. How long does it take to get to Dingwall from Perth?
So if you're driving up, you'd probably be. Oh, you'd be over 2.5 hours, I'd say, up to.
Okay.
So I guess in terms of in other countries, I think we're quite lucky in terms of that's the kind of our maximum journey, for a game of football. We see it as a kind of day and a long haul up to the Highlands, but in terms of England, even, or other countries around the world, I don't think it's too far. But yeah, you're maybe 2.5 hours, 3 hours in total if you're in the train with stops and whatever else. So. But no, it's definitely seen as a day out for supporters, that's for sure.
I a lot of respect for what they're doing up there as well. It's a fantastic little club. Well, not a little club anymore, really. It's a, very well established SPL club, and really, really admire the work they're doing as well up there. But yeah, Matt, thank you so much for today. It's been great fun. I've really enjoyed it. Good. Yeah, wish you the best of luck. I have to be impartial, but to you, best of luck at the end of the month in the final against Livingston. Two great teams. I'm sure it's going to be a great experience, and it really will be an enjoyable match to watch. I'll definitely be tuning in myself. So good luck with that, and the best of luck for the rest of the season. It's a cracking battle, I say. I think St Johnstone, they're just sitting happily mid table at the moment, but fingers crossed for a comfortable end of the season and maybe a little push into the top six.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Now, for people listening, if they want to follow you on social media anywhere, is there anywhere where they can follow you on?
Yeah, just on Twitter is probably the main one. You'll find me just under Matt Gallagher. The Perthshire Advertiser also have a Twitter handle. Just for all things St Johnstone, there's various St Johnstone kind of pages on Twitter that you can follow, both kind of obviously the official Twitter page of St Johnstone and a few unofficial ones as well that are kind of a fountain of knowledge for all things Saints. So a quick search on Twitter and you won't be short of options for following St Johnstone.
Superb. I'll say thanks for that. We'll make sure they get out there as well. And that's it, everyone, for today. So really appreciate you guys at home for tuning in and listening. It would have been me and Matt just having a chat about St Johnstone, which is great fun, but to get the message out to all of you, it's what makes it gives us, really worthwhile. So thank you, everyone at home, for tuning in as well. I'm Adam at UkraFoot24. You can follow me on Instagram, LinkedIn, and all those other wonderful social media pages. Until next time, I don't know what club I'll be at, but I'm sure it's going to be as exciting as today's one. Take care, everyone. Stay safe. Bye.